But the point is that if you ask a person to use the bicycle because it's good for the environment, he will like the idea, but very soon stop doing it if the circumstances are not right. So am I always stressing that if you really take cycling serious, that the only way to promote cycling is to make it efficient and convenient and safe to do so.
Well, that's good advice, huh? That's my guest today. That's Tom. I'll let him pronounce his last name.
My name is Tom Grotefroy, and I'm working for the Dutch Cycling Embassy.
In Utrecht, the Netherlands. Tom and I were introduced. My friend Stephanie Knoll, who was a recent guest on the show, helped make the connection. Just 2 weeks ago, I spent 8 days in the Netherlands, visited 4 different cities, took a lot of pictures, met with friends, did some public speaking, and took a lot of photos. Today's interview with Tom is one of the real highlights. You're going to get a comprehensive look at what the Dutch have done, where they see themselves headed, advice they have for U.S. cities. Well, that's a lot to cover today. How did this trip to Netherlands come about? Well, I was sitting at front of my computer, as I am right now. And up popped an email, a good month, probably 6 weeks ago, from a new friend, I say, in Rotterdam. There was an event, an entrepreneur event. I was invited to participate. One thing led to another. I got a second invitation to speak. That's when I started working on doing some interviews. Came back with 3 interviews. How about this? We'll start with Tom and then I'll come back towards the end and share a few of my own observations of my time in the Netherlands. It really is a fantastic place to visit, to observe the people riding their bikes, the terrific infrastructure, the safe conditions. Like you've read elsewhere, in 8 days, I don't believe I saw a single person wearing a helmet. And you might think that's crazy, that's unsafe, but in that culture, it seemed just fine. We've got so much to cover today. Let's listen.
My name is Tom Grotefroy, and I'm working for the Dutch Cycling Embassy. And you will ask, what is the Dutch Cycling Embassy? It's basically a public-private network organization, and we bring together Dutch stakeholders of the Dutch cycling culture to present the Dutch cycling culture internationally, and in this way to contribute to sustainable urban transport and to create market opportunities for Dutch partners.
Great. It is like a national product, the country's expertise in cycling. The whole world wants to know how you did it.
Well, it took some time for us to discover that we are an example. Dutch people think that cycling is such an ordinary thing, you shouldn't talk too much about it. And it's only the last years that people started to think that this was something to show to the wider world.
That's after they travel to the United States, maybe, and they see what we're living with.
Well, probably, yes. Actually, I've formerly worked in a smaller organization, an NGO called Interface for Cycling Expertise, and we were already working on the international level with this starting point, but we were at that time alone in doing that. And it's only in the recent years that all other stakeholders of Dutch cycling said, well, this is interesting and we should step into it. So instead of only being idealists and zealots trying to sell a message, we now see that there are maybe market opportunities as well.
So let me see if I understand. Would, let's say, a U.S. city approach, and they're interested in more bicycle opportunities in their city, and they're looking to looking for best practices and shortcuts.
Yeah, indeed. What we, for instance, have done in the last year is that Bikes Belong in America organizes excursions to the Netherlands, and then the cycling embassy can help them to make a program for that week, make contacts with city officials, with consultants, show them where they should cycle and look. We also have a program with the Netherlands Embassy in Washington, D.C. to organize so-called Think Bike workshops for American cities. And a city that is interested could come to the embassy in Washington and say we're interested. And the costs are shared between the embassy and the city. And we do a program with local experts to work on a very concrete problem in that particular city. And after 2 days, the solution is presented to a public. So that's the kind of things we organize so far. And of course, we hope that as a follow-up, there come into existence relationships between Dutch experts and American experts.
When people come from the United States again and come here to visit, take one of the tours that you're mentioning, they are often quite moved by the experience. You've observed that.
Yeah, sure. And sometimes we are wondering why they are so moved, but as it's so normal for us, the way we do it, and we tend to see that we're only King One Eye in the land of the blinds. But still, yes, we know we are ahead of many parts of the world when it comes to cycling, yes. And I think that the secret is that in the Netherlands we consider cycling not as something, not as an add-on, but as a main part of urban transport. And I think that is important because we are looking at the urban mobility as a challenge for which we should use all transport modes in the best possible mix. So, in fact, each municipality will ask what is the best mix of modes we can use to make our city work better. And then it's very clear that the bicycle has a large role to play. And it's very clear in the Netherlands, cities have a modal share of cycling of about 30 to 40% in many cases. And that is substantial. So if we take out the bicycle in, out of the Dutch cities, then probably we would come to a total standstill because everything would be congested. So the main reason to foster cycling is that it contributes to the efficiency of our urban transport system and adds to the livability, to air quality, well, all things you can think of.
Right, that's a long list of benefits, isn't it? Health.
Yeah, well, you can go on for hours to talk about the benefits. But the point is that if you ask a person to use the bicycle because it's good for the environment, he will like the idea, but very soon stop doing it if the circumstances are not right. So I'm always stressing that if you really take cycling serious, that the only way to promote cycling is to make it efficient and convenient and safe to do so, whatever other reason you might have to promote it. So that is basic.
The expression that I hear so much is if you build the infrastructure, then the cyclists will show up. Yeah. People will get on bikes for the same reasons. It's safe and it's efficient and all of that. But that's a leap of faith many times, again, in the U.S. when we're so automobile saturated. So people have to actually take that step, commit to that. That's sometimes a hard sell.
Yes, build the infrastructure and they will come. That is true to a certain extent. In fact, you're talking about competitive positions of the modes towards each other. The implication is that cycling should become more attractive than the use of a car. And you can achieve that in two ways. You can make the cycling environment better, but you can also discourage car use to a certain extent. And basically, that is what we have been doing in the Netherlands. We have chosen not to accommodate all car traffic that would come to the cities, which we tried to do in the 1960s, but we stopped doing that because we noticed that that would ruin the quality of our city. So we gave less space to the cars and more space to cycling, to improve the competitive position of cycling. Mm-hmm. So I think,
as you talk about the automobile ruining the inner cities, right? You know the expression, boil a frog. Do you know that expression? It's like we're all been slowly boiled. You know, the car, we've let it into our cities. And the process is so long and slow, I think many of us don't realize what we're missing. Well, I guess that's why another benefit, when we come and visit here, we see the difference is so dramatic.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes say that there is no phenomenon that influenced our city so much in the 20th century as traffic has done, transport has done. It reshaped our cities completely. And in fact, we see in many cities, and certainly in many American cities, that we made cities for cars rather than for people. And I think it's time for a paradigm shift and to look at the people again and to say what is a nice environment for a person to be in, for an individual to be in. And let's face it, being at a very busy road as an individual is not a very nice experience.
Yes, exactly. So how about some advice there? I've been told at times to appeal to, let's say, the local merchants, that removing automobiles, enhancing bicycle access to some of our cities, that's going to be good business. Is that a good argument, do you think, to get people started thinking?
Yes. Well, first of all, any business owner, shopkeeper, will be afraid for any change because he knows what he has and he does not know what he will get. So when we start changing our policies in the 1960s, 70s, and to limit the car access to inner cities, merchants, shopkeepers were very afraid of the effects. In the end, they found out that it brought them much more trade, the turnover, than the previous situation. And if you think about it, you can easily understand that, because when shopping is much nicer if it's a quiet, nice environment for people compared to a situation where you constantly have to be at your toes, not being hit by a car or so, and the noise, etc. So in a shop environment where you can roam between the shops, it's much nicer shopping than if you have only a small sidewalk and, well, are in a noisy situation.
It's just that simple, isn't it? That's another leap of faith, though. So everybody listening should make the trip to Utrecht and see firsthand.
Yeah, sure.
So, Tom, how did you get started in this career? How did this get started?
Well, I originally was educated as an architect. I had an interest in the quality of urban space from that perspective. I got member of the Dutch Cyclists Union, which was founded in the 1970s. At some point, I got in the board, and consequently, they asked me to get a job there and to write about traffic calming. So I started my career as an activist, but developed into a professional expert on urban transport and cycling as a part of that.
Now, as you mentioned, traffic calming, I just read in New York City, of course, have just been hit by Hurricane Sandy. And I saw a critical, you know, a bicycle backlash piece just a little while ago calling traffic calming like planning for traffic jams. That would be the glass half empty way to express traffic calming. But what's your reaction to that?
No. First of all, if you look at the capacity of a street to carry vehicles, then you will find out that lower speeds often result in a higher capacity to accommodate traffic. But of course, that's completely different issue, because we are talking about the quality of the urban space for human beings. And yes, that the implication of that is that traffic get less important and the quality for people residing there gets more important. And we understand that you cannot do that on every road. A city will need some arterials where cars can flow. So in the Netherlands, we have a kind of road hierarchy in which we make a very clear distinction between flow roads, flow streets, arterials, and residential streets. And we make sure that on the streets are flowing, you don't need access to individual properties. So there where people have access to buildings, you can do that in an atmosphere of easiness and quietness.
Back to you as a young man, an architect. Did you ever have an idea what an exciting, you know, how this would develop? That must have been a surprise, the popularity of bicycling.
Yeah, well, to a certain extent, we had an easy job in the Netherlands, because when we started to protest against the developments that were going on, mass motorization, the Netherlands still had a substantial share of cycling. We never went below 20% of all trips. So as activists, we could easily say, give us our fair share of the road. In America, that's, of course, more difficult, because if you're 1% or 2%, then a fair share of the road is very little space.
Crumbs. Take it or leave it. Crumbs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So in that respect, we had a good starting point. But then again, we had our fights as well, because if the civil society had not stepped in and said, we want to sustain the quality of our cities and we want to sustain the mobility of young people who don't own a car and things like that, then we would have gone the American way. I'm sure about that. But civil society stood up, claimed its interests, and we were successful in convincing both politicians and traffic engineers. And the last part is maybe even more difficult, because if you have had a professional training in a certain way and then the users suddenly say that it should be done different, that's a difficult job. Yeah. The professional traditions were against you, so to say. It took us 3 or 4 decades to get where we are today. And now, the paradigm shift has gone through the educational system, etc.
And, of course, one of the big challenges in my thinking is the United States. We have these, again, like national industries, General Motors and Chrysler and Ford. They're big business. They employ a lot of people. They have political clout. Those are... That's a resistance that we have. That
there have been done some historical studies on cycling cultures in Europe, and one of the findings, one of the suggestions, was that the Netherlands was lucky not to have a car industry, because countries that do have a car industry have often had a policy that really discourages cycle use to promote car use. Well, we haven't had that, so that might have been our luck.
Now, how about we've been talking about U.S. municipalities coming to visit. How about China? China, I've never been to China, but just what I read about them, they're a bicycle society that seems to be moving to the automobile as fast as they can get there. Do you have people coming from China too?
Not yet. I've been once in China for 2 days, so I cannot claim to be an expert on the Chinese developments. But what I've heard is that in the 1990s, they did exactly the same thing that Europe did and America has done in the 1960s and after that. So really take every space they have to accommodate car traffic and even pushing away cycling off the streets. What I've understood is that they start to see right now that that is not a sustainable way to go.
Hopefully, huh?
Yeah. Well, the first cities in China, I've heard, are re-evaluating their policies and say, cycling should be a part of our mix.
Hopefully, they're reading. the United States waking up to it. Hopefully, they're...
Well, for China, it's not too late. For them, it's like the 1970s in the Netherlands. They still have a substantial share of cycling, and, they should not let it go down further, but start to stabilize the decrease and building it up again.
I'm no Chinese expert either, but you'd think they could track, like, air pollution, obesity, public health. Those should all be factors that they should be able to observe quite clearly.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. Sure. As far as I know, especially air quality is a big issue in Chinese cities, and that might be a reason why they also discover that the car is not everything.
Maybe we'll get some Chinese listeners to our interview today. Huh? Now, one thing that I'm so delighted to see as I come to Netherlands this trip is so many of the bicycle lanes are protected from the roadway. They're separate. They're just a simple curb, but it seems to be much safer than in the United States. Of course, in my neighborhood, there's a road and there's just a line of paint. You didn't always have those protected bike lanes, we call them. They're popular.
Yeah, we distinguish between lanes and paths, and the paths are physically segregated and the lanes are only striped. We found out that only the physical segregation really protects the cycling. Well, lanes are in certain conditions usable, but it depends also on the speed and the volumes of car traffic. So basically, we make a judgment which is based on the combination of traffic flows, numbers of cars and speeds of cars, and the number of cyclists to come to the conclusion what we have to do. Well, the point is, of course, that you can only implement that type of facilities if you reallocate road space. So you have
That's an expression for a takeaway from the automobile, isn't it?
Well, you don't want to do it at the cost of the pedestrians, of course.
So right there.
You have to take it. You have to take it from somewhere. And well, if we think that there is an unbalance between the car traffic and the functioning of the city, we have to improve the balance. And that can only be done, in my judgment, by taking some space off the cars.
It's just that simple, isn't it? I can picture back at home, like many places in Southern California, we have high-speed arterials taking traffic into neighborhoods that are only accessible by those high-speed arterials, and then bike lanes just painted on the side of the road, many times cars and bicycles sharing the same road, cars going 50 and 60 miles an hour. What would that be in kilometers? A lot.
70, 80 kilometers an hour or so, yeah. Yeah, well, we think that is inherently unsafe. And we use, in fact, pretty simple principles for road safety. We say if you have high volumes and high speeds of cars, then the only safe way to do is to physically segregate cycling from motorized traffic. And if you don't have the space or have good reasons not to separate, then the only other option is to slow down traffic and to decrease the numbers. So it's either segregating or traffic calming.
And it's hard to slow down traffic, though, isn't it? I mean, it's not easy.
Well, it depends. On a highway, it's difficult, yeah, and maybe you shouldn't do it on a highway. But there should be an accordance in the land use function of an area and the road function of an area. So if you have an area with lots of residential functions like shops, living rooms, kids playing on the streets, etc., then you do traffic calming. And if an environment is just for moving, well, then move. No problem with that. So people should understand why you do the traffic calming and what is the quality you get in return for that. And I think that's important. So you shouldn't do it everywhere if there is no reason to do it, but you should do it where there is an obvious reason to do it.
Friends in Portland, Oregon. Portland, of course, one of the prime examples in the United States, but still only single digits of mode share, right? So I've asked friends up there, what are they thinking of doing to take that next leap? And they talk about bike boulevards, right, where you dedicate a certain street. You enhance it for bicycle use at the expense of automobile. And then these segregated bike lanes, the separated bike lanes. That's a pretty simple strategy. You concur with that?
Yeah, sure. You should also bring the values of people into the political debate. that is what happened in the 1970s in the Netherlands. We had not only the cyclist union, but we had also a group which called themselves Stop the Child Murder, and which was protesting against the fact that many young kids were killed in traffic. And their basic argumentation was, and I agree very much with that, is that we should not adapt our kids to the traffic system, but rather the traffic system to our children. They are entitled to use public space. They are entitled to play outside safely. And it's that kind of arguments which can help you to say, okay, in our residential environments, kids should be able to be outside independently without supervision of their parents all the time. That is not what makes you into a mature adult.
And when you take an issue like that, death of children in traffic, that resonates with public officials too.
I often say transport traffic is often considered to be a technical issue for traffic engineers, but at least 50% of transport is a social science. It is about behavior of people, the way they live their lives, the choices they make, the activities they participate in, and how to get there. And it's how you organize it and how you, what value you put to the one aspect in combination to the other aspect. So in that sense, it's social and it's also highly political. Yes.
Well, how about here in the Netherlands? To me, to many people that come and visit this, I wrote some emails this morning. I said, bicycle nirvana. Yeah. But I'm sure that's only relative. What are some of the things that are important to the Dutch in terms of, you know, moving even beyond where you are today with bicycle infrastructure and mode share?
Well, we are struggling with two things. The one is that some people think we've done the job, we can stop, which is not true, because we still have a car problem as well. It's not in the cities, but outside the cities, we are struggling with congestion. And the second thing is spatial planning. The basis is too often based on the assumption that everyone can arrive everywhere by car, still in the Netherlands. So, well, you have to be alert all the time to make sure that people don't, that the developments don't go in the wrong direction. The second issue we're struggling with is that, I talked about reallocation of space, and we did that to a certain extent, but in some cities we are so successful that we have to do a next step in that sense. For instance, in Amsterdam, we suddenly found out that even on the arterials, there are more cyclists than car drivers, and the cars still have more space. So there is time for a next step. Yes.
On the train ride this morning, I came from Rotterdam, went to Schiphol and to Utrecht. I saw still lots of countryside, lots of farmland, it looked like, sheep, you know, in meadows, things like that. And it made me think, again, in Portland, Oregon, they have a urban growth boundary, I think they call it there, where they limit development. Or else, like in New Jersey, they just would have built condos everywhere, right? Do you have limits like that here in Netherlands?
Well, we have constant debates about them. 10 years ago, there was a national spatial plan which would pose such borders, such limits, but they politically were disagreed upon. So, it's a political debate all the time, and you cannot take for granted that you're on the right way because, like I said, you have to be alert all the time and to foster cycling and the interest all the time. You can never stop that.
So I guess we were talking about sprawl.
Yeah.
Right, that's the word to describe it. The American West, so much land, infinite horizons, it seemed like sprawl just happened. Is that all it was? It was just we moved out there and there was nothing there, so we just took up all the space? Or it seems like a gap in architectural or urban planning occurred 100 years ago, some lapse, or what are your thoughts? How did sprawl just... Was it the automobile?
Well, it wouldn't have been possible without the automobile, because a public transport system and needs some density to feed the line. For a cycle-based mobility, you need short distances. So the car is both taking a lot of space because of the wide roads you need to make land use less dense. And on the other hand, it accommodates people who want to live far away and still work in the city. So it is a two-directional enhancing of a certain development. And even in the Netherlands, although I think we did a much better job than America did with regard to sprawl, if you compare the maps of 1950s and today, you will see that the land use of our cities has tripled or maybe even more. Also, in that respect, we have to be very careful on the developments in the Netherlands because, well, the individual use of space has increased. But that increases the distances in the conurbations that we have, and that is detrimental for cycle use. So although we are successful in promoting cycling for a certain category of trips, the short trips, the percentage of those short trips is decreasing. So in fact, we are doing well by keeping the levels of cycling stable, because we gain on the one hand by making cycling more attractive in our cities. On the other hand, we still lose cycling because of increasing distances in our urban developments.
But a different topic, Tom, is many U.S. cities are embracing bicycle share systems. Mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. and Boston. Soon New York will have one too. You know all about best practices. That's probably a good idea for the cities in the U.S. Do you have bike share systems in the Netherlands?
Yeah, but our bike share system is slightly different from what you see in many cities, because in the Netherlands, everyone has a bicycle. And if you want to use a bicycle, you own one. So we don't need a public bike system in our own cities. So the relevance of a bike share system is in the combination with public transport. So our bike share system is a national system, which is run by the Netherlands Railways. And it's mainly to provide bicycle availability for eager trips when you made a train ride. That's slightly different from a situation like Paris, London, Washington, D.C., where the public bike system, in fact, is a kind of, as I see it, a marketing tool to show people how useful a bike can be. So I think that for the American situation, it's wonderful to have those systems because they allow people just to find out how practical a bike can be. We see, for instance, in Paris that the implementation of the public bike system resulted in a rise of, what's the English word for it? Bike sales.
Oh, bike sales.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Because people found out how useful the bicycle is, and then they said, I want to have one for my own.
Now, when you talk about bicycle sales, one thing that I observe right away, now I don't mean to be uncomplimentary, but a lot of the Dutch bikes that I see are not so fancy, right? They're older. They all have fenders. See, none of the bikes in California have fenders. So many of the bikes, it's because our utility of the bicycle is so different. We often see a lot of carbon fiber racing bikes and large groups out cycling on the weekends. It's a totally different to observe that here. It's totally different.
Yeah, sure. Cycling in the States is special. So you dress up as a cyclist in Lycra and you have a fancy bike and that's what you do. You immediately see that the American bike is often not made to be useful. It's just to go fast, but you cannot carry your luggage. If there's rain, you get dirt because there are no mud guards, etc. And our Dutch culture is much more, cycling culture is much more utilitarian. So bikes are equipped with all kinds of things you need to make it useful for everyday use, to take your bag to the office, to do shopping, to bring your kids to school, etc., etc. And yes, our bicycles are being used, and that shows. And then in cities, we have also the problem, because we do have problems with bicycle theft. So people living in inner cities often use an old bike in the inner city and do have a fancy bike at home to be used in the weekends. So that's also something you should bear in mind.
And then, of course, bicycle parking, bike racks. You see, that's what I observe first, is I see people riding bicycles, but then I see like huge bicycle parking lots there.
Imagine they were cars.
Exactly, yeah. It would take 10 times, well, 5 times the space.
Well, 10 times the space, I'm sure. Yeah, well, bicycle parking is a problem which, well, is a challenge, I should say, that we discovered some 15 years ago that we had to do more about it. Also there, we've made progress, but still there are challenges ahead of us. But there is no cycling without bicycle parking, so we have to face that challenge.
And I see lots of the fold-up bicycles, the little portable bicycles, too. I can imagine that's popular, too. Oh, I haven't seen, I've been on the trains, but I haven't seen bicycles on the train. People bring their bikes on the train, too?
Of course.
Well, not for commuting.
No.
And in fact, that is because our train system is also heavily used, and 40% of all train passengers arrive by bicycle on the train. Well, imagine that they want to carry their bicycle on the train. That would require 3 times the train capacity that we have available. So our model is that we have a smooth transfer from bicycle parking to getting on the train, and we have the bike share system to have a bicycle available for the egress trips, and you can take your bicycle on the train outside the rush hours. So that's a different market, and it's the market for bicycles on the train is mainly recreational. You do it if you go for a long tour on your own bike. You won't do it for a one-time visit, because then you rent a bike or use the public bike system.
Well, Tom, when we first started talking, you were describing how people would connect with you to come to Netherlands to organize a tour and see all the bicycle infrastructure. Tell everybody, how would they, I'll have links in the show notes to the Dutch Cycling Embassy. Yeah, yeah. Would you care to mention your website URL?
www.dutchcycling.nl.
And what are some things that if some city officials, let's say in my neighborhood, were thinking of coming to see, to visit, how much time, what should they know? How much time should they dedicate?
Well, it depends, of course, on what they want and also on their budget, I should say, because we cannot offer everything for free. But if you look around a week, you can speak to some experts, you can do some biking and experience the facilities and how good they are. You can look at the different aspects. So, well, if you have 3 to 4 days or a week, that would be very nice.
And would you typically take them to several cities, or just concentrate here in Utrecht, Amsterdam?
No. Like I said, we are a public-private network organization. We have different municipalities in it. And we have, well, the Dutch cities are different, but in all Dutch cities you see that there has been catered for cycling. And for American cities, we often say go to Rotterdam, because that's a bit more industrial city, which to our standards is not that good for cycling, but for your standards...
I know, it looks great.
I'm sorry to say this... But you can more relate to the situation there. It's not that far away from, and still is reasonably good. But we have smaller cities, which are worth visiting as well. So, well, in fact, we also try not to bother the municipal experts all the time. So we try to send excursions. Yeah, exactly.
That must be why I am enjoying my visit It's my third day in Rotterdam now, and it does feel very comfortable to me. Maybe it's the more modern architecture or just what it is, I'm not sure, but I've enjoyed it. I feel like I fit right in there and hope to take home many photos of what I'm observing. Well, Tom, thank you so much for meeting with me today and inviting me out to your office here in Utrecht. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We're back in the studio, and wasn't that fun spending time with Tom, huh? He had good answers to so many of my questions. I can picture myself going back. Wouldn't it be fun to lead a delegation of your city officials, take them back, and let Tom arrange a tour? Like I hinted at earlier, I came back a different person. Every spare moment that I had in Rotterdam, and it rained while I was in The Hague, but then Utrecht and Amsterdam, I was out with my camera observing, taking pictures of the infrastructure, and then finally zeroing in on the cyclists themselves. So come to the website, cdmcyclist.com, and you'll see some of the photos, and I have links to a post I came back and one of my favorite blogs, Women on Bikes SoCal, posted a summary of my travels called Dutch Dames. I'll have links to that in the show notes as well. But how did I feel after spending 8 days in the Netherlands? Well, it's hard to come back to Southern California where, you know, we're bicycling side by side with automobiles traveling 40, 50, 60 miles an hour in so many cases. The Dutch seem like an advanced society to have built separated facilities for their cyclists. They're safe and they're well used, even if they do let mopeds and scooters use the bike paths too. It's kind of funny. To see that, then come home, it really helps me to see just how much work there is to do if we're to mimic the Dutch and really build safe conditions such that we too have the same mode share, the same number of people out on their bikes. It's a worthy endeavor, and I feel inspired. Well, thanks once again for coming by the website, listening to the show. I appreciate your attention. Would you tell a friend, and best of all, come by the website and leave a comment behind? I'd appreciate that. Well, again, thank you very much, and good night.